Doc took aim well above the missile.
The incoherent matched with the incomprehensible.
Hey,
at the sound of JB's aforementioned shouted obscenity, Doc, Dean, and Jack thumbed back their pistols' hammers and steadied their arms. Doc straight-armed 4 pounds of blue steel.
Anyway, past a dozen paces, I am afraid these tired old eyes of mine will betray me. Even with your sage advice, I shall be blessed if one of my pistol balls comes within a yard of the target at this distance.
Shoot straight, Doc, for Dad.
Fear not, my boy. I have the goal well in mind, and even if my shots fall wide, you can be sure that 9 bellows of this hoary old cannon will add considerably to the general tumult and confusion.
His challenge issued, J.B. opened fire with the Uzi, raking the street with a short full-auto burst. The slugs raised puffs of dirt all around the standing figures, but landed well away from the missile, as he intended. He'd gotten their attention. The black-armored quartet stopped what they were doing and turned toward him. J.B. shouted as the clattering echoes faded away.
We want our man back! Give him back to us safe and we'll leave! Otherwise, that missile is going to get shot up real good!
That would be a big mistake. We mean you no harm.
J.B. couldn't tell which of the figures was speaking, but it didn't much matter. He didn't intend to get into a debate. The speaker had just told him what he wanted to know, that the rocket was vulnerable to gunshot damage. It was time to push things to the wall.
You got to the count of 10, or I'm going to write my name along the side of your rocket with blaster slugs. I got a nice long name, too. You'll want to remember it on your trip to hell. It's John Barrymore Dix.
Mr. Dix, your demand is impossible. We can't possibly produce your friend that quickly. You've got to give us time to work out the details.
How long?
Until daybreak.
The black-armored folk shifted position on the street. Not far, but it was the move JB had been watching for. It told him they weren't going to deal Ryan for the missile. The question was, could his threat keep them from going for their blasters? There was only one way to find out.
10, 9, 8, 7.
On the count of 5, the black-armored folk dropped the pretense and lunged for their weapons.
Shit!
JB rose above the heap of rubble, pinning the Uzi's trigger and spraying the area downrange with a line of 9mm slugs. Before he could walk the autofire to the missile, a green light winked at him from downtown Moonboy. In the same instant, a big chunk of concrete on the pile in front of him exploded like a grin. A thunder-crack shockwave made half his face go numb. As he hunkered back down, 3 more blocks of concrete on the heap blew up, sending rock shrapnel flying. JB's bluff had been called, and it didn't take a white coat to figure he and the others were overmatched. None of them could help Ryan if they were chilled. The only thing left for them to do was retreat, if they still could. As JB turned to run, he felt the wetness sliding down the side of his neck. A second thermite explosion rocked the wag. When the vehicle crashed back down, the wheels on Ryan's side dropped to the rims as the roasted tires blew out. Inside the passenger compartment, it was pure chaos. Some of the SEC men, not harnessed in, scrambled to regain their feet, while others, those who had broken bones bouncing off the ceiling and walls, writhed and moaned on the floor. Everything in the wag that could burn, wire insulation, plastic pipe, duct tape, was burning. Dense smoke started pouring up from the floorboards between Ryan's feet. He slapped his harness's release buckle.
Bail, goddammit, or we're all gonna fry!
The driver shouted through his plastic hood. Beside him, the gunner sat slumped, chin resting on his chest, blood pouring from his ears, and pooling at the tightly cinched neck of his yellow breather bag. There would be no return of fire. Booting the rear doors open, 4 of the uninjured SEC men jumped out with their weapons raised.
Go! Go!
Nara shoved Ryan hard in the shoulder. She too had grabbed up a tri-barreled blaster. Ryan hopped out onto the tarmac and sprinted after the SEC men who were deserting the wag. Nara ran right on his heels. The world outside was bleak, and it was still inside. Bathed in hard artificial light, a vast tunnel-like freeway, easily 50 lanes wide, stretched out before him. More than half the lanes were blocked by vehicles obviously wrecked, stripped, abandoned. Other wags appeared to be undamaged except for numerous sideswipes, perhaps left by their drivers because they had run out of fuel. The wailing alarm horns had turned this high-speed obstacle course into a parking lot. The operational vehicles, those with drivers, had stopped too, waiting for the danger to pass. Evidently, there was no way to escape from it, whatever it was. Most of the wags looked non-military. They had transparent windshields and side windows, and no heavy armor plate. Behind their yellow plastic hoods, wide-eyed drivers sucked on green canisters and stared as Ryan ran between the lines of bumper-to-bumper vehicles. The SecMen paused just ahead, beside an occupied civilian wag. Ryan was closing the gap when the front windshield exploded in hard, bright light, and the roof peeled back like the lid of a pre-dark can. The shockwave sent the SecMen crashing to the deck. With bits of metal debris screaming past their ears, Ryan and Nara took cover behind a rear bumper. Then, something much, much larger swished overhead. Ryan cranked his head around in time to catch the glint of the freeway floodlights off a thin wire suspended in the air. In the same instant, he saw a guy in a yellow bubble and white coat leap from the wag's rear doors. Huth jumped a fraction of a second before the wire-guided rocket burrowed inside the opening. No one else got out. With a terrific thunderclap, the wag flew apart. Its dismantled side panels clobbered the vehicles on either side. Before Ryan could blink, there were more explosions, a chain reaction of them as one after another, fuel tanks in the parked vehicles blew. Orange balls of gasoline fire blossomed, blackening the freeway's low ceiling, then dying back to envelop wag roofs and driver compartments. Beyond the burning wreckage, Ryan got a glimpse of Huth's bobbing yellow hood as he raced in the opposite direction. It was easy to disappear among the thousands of stopped cars. Likewise, it was hard to see where the enemy fire was coming from. Then, the ear-splitting siren stopped. After a pause, it was replaced by a long, steady tone.
That's the all clear.
Nara stripped off her breathing device and discarded it. Ryan and the SecMen crouched ahead of them did the same. Even without the hood, he couldn't see where the attack had come from.
How about a blaster for me?
Ryan pointed at the black grip of the spare sidearm she had stuffed in her lab coat pocket.
No, let's move.
The SecMen didn't need an invitation from her. Some 75 feet away, they were already up and running through the maze of parked and destroyed vehicles. Ryan and Nara ran after them. After the all-clear, the operational wags didn't stay parked for long. Drivers peeled their tires to get clear of the free fire zone. They had no intention of stopping or even slowing for pedestrians in jeopardy. As Ryan started across a lane of freeway, Nara grabbed him by the arm, jerking him back as a monster truck roared down on them. The long trailer it towed momentarily blocked their escape route and separated them from their supposed protectors.
Hey, wait!
Nara yelled at the SecMen as the rear of the truck swept by. Ryan saw them running down the row of dead wags. They didn't slow, they didn't turn. The air was split by a loud explosion. Backlit by blooming orange fire, the four small figures disintegrated along with a row of ruined vehicles. Hot shrapnel pelted down all around them.
Give me a fucking blaster!
The blonde put her free hand on her backup sidearm, but didn't pull it from her coat pocket. It was a defensive move on her part, to keep him from grabbing it for himself. To drive home her point, she leveled the long blaster's muzzle at his chest. A deep voice growled from behind them.
Put your weapons down! We've got you surrounded!
Ryan dropped down and put his cheek to the pavement, looking under the chassis of the wag they were hiding behind. Past the wheels on the other side, he could see black boots and black armored shin guards.
You want to get your ass cooked? I'm not going to ask you again!
Nara carefully set her weapons on the concrete.
If you'd let me, I would have made a fight of it.
Then I guess we're lucky you're not the one in charge.
Stand up! Hands in the air!
Ryan did so. Nara rose beside him. Leaning on the hoods and over the roofs of vehicles, black ski-masked figures ringed them with blasters. Ryan counted 11. Though they wore hoods and body armor, he could tell that two of them were women by the size of their bare arms and their general builds. The armor was battle-scarred, mismatched, and in some cases incomplete. Almost at once, a long, metal-armored 4x4 vehicle screeched to a stop in front of them. Like the assortment of body armor, it looked as if it had seen plenty of action. It had a wedge of thick, blast-proof glass for a front windshield and rectangular side windows. Two of the hooded men jumped forward and jerked the side doors open.
Okay, Jurassic, you and Mr. Wonderful get into